Sarah, I started a Substack last spring, just kind of as an experiment, and it turns out I love it. I'm treating it kind of like an old school blog, writing about things that are happening in my life.
Megan, I've loved following your stuff on Substack, and I actually just really like Substack in general.
You know, we've both been a lot less active on Instagram lately, and I'm finding that Substack scratches that itch to connect and create without all the busyness of a typical social media feed. So I would love it if Mom Hour listeners wanted to look me up there. I'm at meganfrancis.substack.com, and that's Megan with two A's, meganfrancis.substack.com.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, and I am joined right now by Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hello. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm good. It's March 1st. So rabbit. Do you say that on the first of a new month?
No, I did when I was a kid for like a month. Then I forgot to ever do it again.
Yeah, my husband grew up doing it, and so my kids do it. So I didn't grow up doing that, and then I didn't find out. So rabbit to those who rabbit. Happy March. We have a great interview today. So Megan, I've brought you here to chit chat a little bit, but then we're going to play my conversation with Karen Walrond here in just a bit. And Karen was such a fun guest. You actually have known Karen longer than I have.
I read Karen's blog before she adopted Alex, like going way back. She was like OG blogger, but she was so OG that it was before blogging was even really like a thing yet. It was like, I want to say I read her in 2003 or four.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
And I'm sure I discovered her circa 2010, because that's kind of when my blog reading like really took off. 2009, 2010. And so if you guys are not familiar with Karen Walrond, I'll just give you the official bio. She's a photographer, an author, a speaker, a podcaster. She's an adoptive mom of one daughter, Alex, you mentioned, Megan, who's now in high school. And actually, that's one of the things we talk about is raising a teenager and also raising an only child, because Megan, we get that request sometimes. And
we have nothing. I'm like, I remember when I had an only child for those 20 months.
Yeah. I mean,
21 years ago.
You, by definition. Well, what's interesting is you have talked about getting the looks and the questions and the stigmas around having a large family, starting kids, having kids as a young mom. Karen comes from the other side, which is starting a family on the later side of things and choosing to have one. And we get into that. But we've had listeners also come to us with that kind of pointing that out, that there's, some pressure or some expectations around having an only that we can't speak to personally.
It turns out no matter what you do, people have opinions.
They will.
So you cannot escape it.
You can't. That's such a good point. We also have some really interesting conversations about family culture, which is something you and I kind of talk about. But Karen's perspective is so interesting because literally they're a family of three and all three are from different countries of origin, background. And she's so intentional about the way they have created family culture in their home and in their lives, drawing from these different backgrounds. Her husband's British. And yeah, so that was really interesting. And then not to give too much away, but they lost their home in Hurricane Harvey. That is a spoiler. But we talk about redecorating a home from scratch, which I think is so fascinating, you know, after the trauma, of course, of Harvey, but then kind of the opportunity of, like, can you imagine if you just, everything was
a blank slate?
Yes, a blank slate, and everything was an intentional choice.
If you had a blank slate, but you weren't 22 again.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And Karen is in her way very intentional about that too. I mean, that's something she's great at, just making it really intentionally crafting and curating the world around her. So
yes.
She's awesome.
So yeah, that's kind of an overview of the topics, and they're varied and they're all fascinating. So stick around for my conversation with Karen Walrond.
Okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from Our Place into the boxes yet because she's using it like every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of Our Place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, Our Place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, Our Place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to FromOurPlace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's FromOurPlace.com, code MOMHOUR.
Megan, the end of the school year and kickoff to summer is a busy time of the year for families, but we can all eat stress-free and hit our wellness goals with ready-to-eat meals from our sponsor, Factor.
Factor's delicious meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Plus, they have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you fueled all day long.
So our team was comparing notes recently on our favorite Factor meals, and Katie loved the herb-crusted chicken with mashed cauliflower and toasted almond green beans. I loved that one too. And get this, so did her little boy, Charlie. She heated it up for lunch one day, and Charlie, who's 3, ate almost all of the green beans. I mean, that's quite an endorsement, right?
I was going to say, what a parenting win. And I get it, Charlie. Those green beans are crazy good. And if you really want to treat yourself, they even have meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code MOMHOUR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMHOUR50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hey, Karen, welcome to the Mom Hour.
Well, what's up? I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. This is so fun to talk to a fellow podcaster and someone I've gotten to know, but less around the mom stuff. So I'm really excited for our conversation.
I know. It's so funny. You know, when your kid gets older, you talk less and less in public about parenting. So this is actually going to be really fun for me. I haven't done this for a while.
Oh, good. I'm really excited. So we have lots of different topics to get to today, but I want to start with one that we actually get quite a few listener questions about, and that is raising an only child. So you and your husband have an only child. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about your family who lives in your house, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So we are kind of an unusual family in that all three of us are from different countries.
Love
so
it.
I'm originally from Trinidad and Tobago in the Caribbean. And I was working in the UK when I met my husband, Marcus, who is from Cornwall, England. And then we moved to America after we got married and we adopted our daughter here in the United States, Alexis or Alex. I call her Alex, but she goes by Alexis at school.
So, okay.
So we're sort of a multiracial, multinational family, the three of us.
A threesome. And how old is Alex now?
Alex, next weekend, the weekend after we record this, will be 15.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So let's start with, there's so many things about your family I love and we're going to dig into, but let's start with the only child thing. And it's hard not to sound kind of like I'm putting you in this box of you have an only child, but we do get listeners coming to us saying, you know, you and Megan have all these kids and we've talked a little bit on our show. Megan's talked about kind of the comments and the looks and the pressures and the expectations around having a large family. And I know from hearing from listeners that the same exists on the other side of the coin, which is people maybe making comments, when are you going to have another one or just passing judgment of any kind on the size of your family. Is that something that you guys went through or have gone through over the years, you know, being an only child family?
Yeah, we don't get that so much anymore. I mean, now that she's 15, they kind of look, go, I guess you're done. Right? it's so funny. When Marcus and I got married, we had intended not to have children at all.
Okay.
Not for any other reason than just, you know, I mean, we loved kids, but it wasn't really going to be a priority of ours. And I remember we had gone back to the UK and were after we had both got married and we transferred to the US and gone back to the UK, and I watched him with his nieces, and I remember saying, oh my gosh, you should be a dad. Like, you, and literally, and it wasn't even for me. It was like, oh no, you should be a dad. You're really good at this. You should be a dad. And we chose adoption as our first choice to grow our family. It had been something we'd actually even talked about before we got married, that, mm-hmm. you know, we're not going to have kids, but if we do have kids, adoption would be something that we'd be really interested in. So we came back from that. I think that vacation was in August, and in September, we were at the adoption agency, and the following September, the adoption was final.
Wow. Like,
everything was done. So yeah. It was pretty quick. Of course, at the very beginning, we get, oh, are you going to give her a little brother? Are you going to give her a sister kind of thing? We got that a lot. And basically, the way we would respond is, no.
Like, yeah, this is us. Yeah,
exactly. Like, not even explain it. Like, no, she's not going to have a brother or sister. We're good. Occasionally, sometimes people would do that. But also, I will say, both Marcus and I were in our mid-30s when we got married. Mm-hmm. By the time Alex came around, you know, I was 36, 37. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I don't know that we got it as much as, say, a family that maybe, you know, started growing their family in their 20s kind of thing, right? Like, I think people were like, you know, oh, you know, maybe she's trying and can't. Or,
they had all kinds of assumptions, I'm sure.
Of other assumptions, yeah. Exactly. So we didn't get it too much.
Do you feel like as Alex got older, you kind of noticed maybe some of the benefits or some of the, I don't know, benefits is the wrong word. We're not trying to say who wins, like the mom with five kids or the mom with one. But are there some ways that you have really embraced and loved being a tribe of three? I'm thinking especially, you know, to encourage those out there who do feel like they're maybe not represented as having chosen just to have one child.
Yeah. So I can't imagine being a mom of more than one kid, mm-hmm. honestly. Like, I always tell friends of mine who have more than one kid, I'm like, you're a superhero. because obviously, we don't deal with like the fights or the, kind of thing that people, the sibling rivalries and that kind of thing that other families with more children would have. On one hand, I feel like Alex has always been a little sort of an adult in mm-hmm. our family, right? Like, because all she's ever hung out with is our adults and, until she went to school. So I feel like there's something there that may not be there for people mm-hmm. who have more than one kid. But then I also hear friends who have lots of kids who say, oh no, it's easier when you have more because they entertain themselves and you don't have to entertain. I think that might be true.
Yeah.
The other thing that, and I don't know if this is an only kid thing or not, but the whole separation anxiety around, you know, like when you take your kid to preschool for the first time
and,
I don't remember ever having that with Alex. As a matter of fact, I remember when she was like two and a half, I think I took her to preschool and, you know, I talked to the preschool teachers and kind of said, okay, well, should I stay for the first, few hours? And, you know, what should I do? And they said, well, you know, let's play it by ear. And mm-hmm. I dropped her off and literally she walked in, she looked around and she said, bye mom. And
oh
ran.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And the teacher looked at me, we both laughed. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll see you in a couple hours. Right. And just left. And I don't know if it's because it was such a novelty to have so many other kids around. Mm-hmm. And I think Alex, even though she's a quieter kid, she's an extrovert. Like mm-hmm. she really loves being around people. So I don't know if it was just sort of the novelty of like, oh my gosh, there's toys and kids and, you know, this is cool. And I don't have that at home. Right.
Right.
So I don't know if that's an only kid or just an Alex kid thing. But it was funny at one point, I mentioned Alex was adopted and we had an open adoption. So mm-hmm. which means that we knew her birth mother. My husband and I were actually there for her birth.
Okay.
My husband cut the cord. Right.
Wow.
So we were involved. And when Alexis was a year old, we moved to the Caribbean. We moved to Trinidad.
Okay.
And right at the same time, Alex's birth mother was pregnant and contacted us to see if we would be interested in adopting Alex's birth brother, it mm-hmm. ended up being. And I remember Marcus and I really kind of struggled with it. Yeah. Like, we were like, do we owe it to Alex to do this? Like, do we have to do this? And a friend of mine who was an only child, but who had a huge family, she had like 5 or 6 kids. I remember going to her and going, what do you think? Because mm-hmm. you kind of have a perspective of both. Overall, she basically said, she goes, you know what? You need to make the decision, not for Alex, but for you. Mm-hmm. Alex is going to be fine no matter what. Mm-hmm. And so what do you guys want to do? And it was really sort of like she gave us permission to go, oh, well, no, we just really want one.
Yeah.
And it worked out. It worked out beautifully. It worked out fine.
I love that advice so much. We also get a lot of people coming to Megan and me with wanting to know if they should have one more. It's not usually the onlys, but it's usually people going from 2 to 3 or 3 to 4, and they'll list the pros and cons. You know, on the one hand, you've got, you know, this robust big family to all be together in the future. On the other hand, you're stretched thin right now with a bunch of little kids. And we just always say, like, all of those things are reasons. They're not necessarily a reason. Like, they're not necessarily your reason. Like, yes, you might need a bigger car. That may be true, or you might go on fewer vacations, but they're pieces of the puzzle. None of them are like the thing that tips the scale, I think, for most people. Right. For most people, it is, I think we're a one kid family. I think we're here. We're all here. That's what we kind of said when we felt like we were all here. So,
Although you just brought something up, like what about, maybe you couldn't travel as much. That is one thing, because travel is huge.
Yeah, I would love
for
you to talk about that. I mean, I know just from observing you on social media that is big for you, and it is easier just with 3 people.
It's cheaper. As soon as the kid is what, like 2 years old, you're pretty much paying for another seat on the plane, right? Like, there's no such thing as like a kid's pass on a flight.
An 8-year-old lap child. Yeah,
exactly. And it's because travel is just such a big deal for us. Every time I buy tickets, I'm like, thank God we just have one, because, if we had, 3 or 4, I'd be like, well, we're grounded. We can't, we can't travel this much. We just wouldn't have had the cash. But, but we didn't think about that at the time. It turned out that way, but we didn't think about it when we were making the decision.
And I think it all evens out in the end. Like, my kids are friends with some kids who are only kids, and they're, from my kids' perspective, it looks amazing. Like, they get the whole house to themselves. They sit wherever they want in the car. And then from the only kid's perspective, they love coming over to our house, because there's just a lot going on. There's somebody to play with at every turn. So in the end, there's
balances.
Maybe pros and cons, or there's just different, it
for
balances.
Sure.
You mentioned travel, and that is something that I have just observed being kind of a core value of your family, mm-hmm. and just observing. So I want to talk about this idea of family culture and kind of developing your immediate family's family culture. Mm-hmm. I think all of our listeners out there are doing that with their families, whether they know it or not. Your story is kind of maybe on the surface more, there's more to talk about, because, like you said, you're 3 different countries, you're multinational, multiracial, mm-hmm. you've got this amazing family, and then it's the 3 of you, and you're bringing all of these various backgrounds. So has that been something that you've been kind of intentional about over the years? Like, what is our family culture, the 3 of us? And maybe just talk about how that's evolved over time.
Yeah. So, that's such a great question, because we haven't, a lot of it is sort of natural. Like, the fact is that, my parents live close by, and so my daughter necessarily grows up with a very pretty steep Trinidadian culture, mm-hmm. right? Not just because of me, but because, her grandparents go mm-hmm. by. As soon as her grandparents are over, I speak in a Trinidadian accent. She learns, phrases that are Trini. And then of course, a lot of times, like if we go on a big trip, it usually involves going back to England, because mm-hmm. we have to visit my husband's family.
Right.
So some of that is just the nature of the beast, right?
Sure.
The nature of us being here. But another thing that I think about a lot, and I've actually been thinking about it more and more, and I think we're going to talk about it a little bit with what happened with us with the storm, but a lot of it is also, I've lived in America now for, 30 something years, maybe more at this point, right? Off and mm-hmm. on for 30 something years. And so there's a lot of me that thinks, okay, well, what is it about being a Trinidadian that I love? And mm-hmm. what are sort of the values the cultural values of being a Trinidadian, and how do I bring that in, and how do I make them alive for mm-hmm, Alex? Mm-hmm. But then also acknowledging that, you know, she's an American kid, and like, how do we bring in American traditions mm-hmm. to our home that my husband and I didn't grow up with?
Right.
And how do we do that to make them sort of alive for her, and make them so that she has that sort of cultural basis to speak to to her friends. So one of the big things to this day, Marcus and I still struggle with it, is Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. right? Because we're like, okay, so what's Thanksgiving now? Like, okay, there's a turkey and football. Like, usually that's what people say. It's like, okay, well, there's football. And I'm like, well, neither of us are big football fans. So how do we do that? And I'm like, so what about the thankful part? And they're like, oh, yeah, some people say what they're thankful for. But it doesn't sound like there's like a, you know, like there's with Christmas, for example, like, you know, you wake up, you open the presents, right? Like, there's sort of a thing. And so we're sort of making it up as we go along, right? Like, all right, well, I guess we're doing turkey, and I guess we're doing stuffing, and okay, we're in the South, so I guess that means cornbread dressing instead of, you know, and so we're sort of learning it as well. So there's certain things that are, that we are, you know, we have to kind of think about, but mostly our family values, when it comes to culture, is mm-hmm. that we're not just that we are welcoming of other cultures, but we're curious of other cultures. Like, this is something that we go out of our way to learn about. And so, again, with the travel, like, it's a core value of our family. Mm-hmm. And, Marcus and I had said, we want, by the time she leaves home at 18, that she has 18 stamps in her passport. Like, that's sort of been our goal. And we've made it. Now, I will admit that part of it's cheating, because we lived in the Caribbean for a while, and it's pretty easy to hop over to an island and get another passport.
Just a quick trip.
Exactly. So it's sort of easy to do that. But you know, we've done it, and we continue to, like, oh, this is something that we really want to do, because we don't want to raise a kid who, when faced with somebody from another culture, has any reaction to it other than interested curiosity, right? And interested and welcoming curiosity. And that's huge for us.
I love that. I'm curious what it was like for Alex when she was a little kid, and kind of piecing together that, like, oh, maybe my family, it like did come together a little bit differently than most of my school friends' families. Do you remember what that was like either the conversations or maybe funny, cute things that she, as she started to kind of understand her family origins, anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, well, there's kind of two stories that actually immediately come to mind. The first one was, I remember when she was little, like, she just turned 3, and we were talking about countries. And I remember I said, so you were born in America, so you're American. Daddy was born in England, so he's English, and I was born in Trinidad, so I'm Trinidadian. And I remember her looking at me, and she goes, you're not Trinidadian. And I was like, I'm not. She goes, you're Trinamamian. And she just laughed and laughed and laughed.
That is so cute.
It was really funny. And she knew what she was saying.
She got it.
Which was really funny. So that was one thing that I'll never forget that. And then the other one that was really interesting was, when she was in kindergarten, so she was about, a little older, about 5, and I remember her coming home, and she said, Mom, I feel so sorry for Isabel, her best friend at the time. And I was like, what's wrong with Isabel? And she goes, Isabel just has one mom. And I said, well, don't you have one mom? She's like, no, you know how, like, I have you, and I have a birth mom. She just has one. Oh. And I was like, well, babe, sometimes that's how it works, right? Like, sometimes the birth mom is the mom, right? Like, that's what happens sometimes. Yeah. And she's like, but that's so sad, right? Like, I heard her just being like, just felt so sorry for poor Isabel for just having one mom. So
I love that so much.
So I love that for her, like, well, sure, that's how it works, right? You have a birth mom, and the birth mom chooses the parents, and you know, because we obviously have talked to her about it forever, right? That's how it happened. But she just couldn't, she was like, oh God, those poor people, it was just one.
Well, I do think, I mean, it's so cool that she will leave home with not just kind of a curiosity and appreciation for, you know, people of different cultures, but her own culture being so rich and interesting. I meant to ask earlier, but can you remind everybody where Trinidad is, just in case our listeners like aren't picturing their global geography?
You know, no problem at all. Actually, I find that people sort of know Trinidad a little bit more now than they did like when I first got here. So because of people like Cardi B's mother, I think, was Trinidadian, and Nicki Minaj is a Trini. So there's more people that know. But so if you think of the, you know, the archipelago of Caribbean islands, right? So you think of Cuba, and there's like a whole chain of islands that comes off of Cuba. Trinidad is the very last one. So it's the one, it's about 9 miles off the coast of Venezuela. It's right off the coast of South America.
Okay.
You actually can see it from my parents' front porch from their old house. So yeah, I mean, so it's really, really close to Trinidad. And it has, its culture is primarily, it's a really unique culture because it's the biggest population is South Asian.
Oh,
interesting. After the British abolished slavery, there was slave because there was a sugar industry there at the time. After they abolished slavery, they started bringing over people from other cultures as indentured servants. So there were East Asians that they brought over, people from China, East Asia, and then also South Asians, India, Pakistan. And then there were also even like Middle Eastern, like Syrians, Lebanese, and everybody like started having babies with everybody. So, so it's very, very multiracial. And also like the food and the music, you can like the food is, there's the very African and very Indian influences, and the music, like our music at Christmas time is in Spanish because of Venezuela's proximity.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of multiracial stuff that happens and multicultural stuff that really makes up what Trini culture is. So I guess I come by my curiosity about cultures, honestly, because I'm multiracial, you know, I'm Black, I consider myself Black, but my grandmother was Chinese. Like we're very multiracial just in my own blood family.
Right.
So that's what Trinidad is. It's very cool. We have one of the best carnivals in the world. We're known for the steel pan. We invented that, the steel pan that you think of when you think of the Caribbean, that was invented in Trinidad. And
I love it. Well, anytime you post on social media with kind of your island identity, I feel like I learned something and laugh, and you've just got, I don't know. I love that about you.
I'm a very proud Trini.
I love it. Okay. So I want to transition to talking a little bit about parenting a teenager. Mm. I am not yet doing that thing. My oldest is almost 11.
Almost there, baby.
Yep. And Megan's like been doing it forever. She's got a 21, a 19, a 15, and a 13.
Oh,
so on our show,
she's a pro.
I know. Yes. And all boys. And then she's got a girl at the end. So on our show, we do touch on parenting teens. I am curious how, just as a mom, how you have found the teenage years, if anything has surprised you. And I do think that being a mom of an only is kind of related to this as well, because you don't have a comparison. She doesn't have, you know, you're not parenting a tween and a teen together, or it is like you are in the phase, whatever you're in, you're
That's
in it. And so I would love to hear just kind of your thoughts, maybe anything that surprised you or what you thought it was going to be like going in. And now she's almost 15. So you're in it.
Yeah. Am I? See, that's the thing. That's what's interesting, right? Is like, I feel like it's going great. First of all, it's going great. Like she is funny and fun and like politically aware. Right. And so, you know, first of all, Alex is just a funny kid. Like that's sort of one of her superpowers, is that she's got this very, very dry wit. We call her Black Daria, right? Because she's sort of this very, very dry person with this incredible wit. And so it's really fun because she's also pretty, like, she's pretty aware of, you know, like what's going on in politics, what's happening in the world. And so it's fun having conversations with her, or her making her sort of wry, humorous observations about what's going on, which is a lot of fun. Why I said, am I in it? It's sort of like, so far so great, but you know, like everybody else, like you're like, well, I hear it's horrible and it's been awesome now. And can I relax yet?
Is the other shoe about to drop?
Exactly. Right. I will say what has surprised me, I don't know if surprise is the right word, what I failed to grasp. Mm-hmm. And so I'm learning now, and I should not be as shocked about it, is the problems are so much bigger.
Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, like, it's so funny when nowadays, I was just talking to a friend of mine who also has teenagers, and I was like, you know, when young moms, like brand new moms, are like, oh, this is so difficult.
Right.
Like the sleepless night, they want, you know, if they wake me up every, you know, multiple times a night. And I'm like, oh, honey, like, that's the easy part when they're waking you up crying. It's when they're waking up multiple times a night because you just found out like one of their friends was like caught with, I don't know, vaping, vaping dope, which I didn't even know that. I always thought vaping the other day was like nicotine. It wasn't until recently I was like, oh, you can vape other things? Like, oh, crap. Yeah, I, like, I didn't realize that, right? So, you know, or you find out, you know, or, you know, you're starting to, you know, right now we're right at the beginning where we're starting to talk about dating and what's that going to look like. So that kind of thing is really, I didn't expect it. I feel, I don't want to say surprised because I feel like that, like it shouldn't have been a surprise. You know what I mean? Like it was like, I should have known that this was all going to come. So that's been, and then the other thing recently, so she's a freshman and she said the other day, to me, just as she was going to bed, she goes, you realize next year I'm going to be a junior? And I said, no, babe, you know, you're a freshman. And she goes, no, because this fall I'll be a sophomore, which means fall next year I'll be a junior.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, like, we're running out of time. Like, oh, I got, oh, you know, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, college, right? Like that's right there. Even though she just started her first year of high school.
Right.
Now I'm like, oh, that's how fast it's going to go.
Yeah.
Okay. You know? So that's really interesting. Also just kind of figuring out what turns her on as far as like subjects, like is she an artist, is she an engineer, is she a writer, and just sort of like watching her figure that out, that's the best part. That is like the best part of parenting a teenager,
and
sort of watching
and I want to ask about that because we actually recently did a couple of episodes on this, you know, the quote-unquote helicopter parenting and then the quote-unquote other end of the spectrum, which we kind of broke that down and decided we don't like the, it's not really a binary thing anyway, but there is this dance of, you know, encouraging your kids' talents and sort of supporting them and being there as they figure out who they are. And then there's this other part of literally just kind of stepping back and watching it happen. Have you found yourself like, has that been a natural balance for you? Or do you lean more, you know, controlling is not the right word, but lean more involved or more stepped back just naturally?
So I would say that I'm a pretty, I'm sure there's people, there are parents that are far more laid back about it than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say that. But, like, for example, I really don't care what she studies.
Mm-hmm.
But I do care that she studies something after high school.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So, it doesn't necessarily have to be university. Mm-hmm. Like if she wants to go to culinary school or something like that, like, I mean, she doesn't, but if that were something she wanted, but but I am pretty strong that you need something more than a high school diploma to move in the world, right? Especially you're a Black woman, right? Like you need to have it. But I'm less concerned. Whereas my father strongly moved me toward engineering, right?
Okay,
like I have an engineering degree because my father wanted me to have an engineering degree. Let's be very clear about that. So, so it's less about that. What I think is interesting, and this is something that I feel like my bias is that it's because she was adopted, is I have no genetic ego involved with her.
Right. Interesting.
Right? So I can't look at her. And when I say, wow, she's an amazing writer, she gets that from me.
Right. Or, right. You know, it's not like, you know,
it's not my thing. And so that's been really interesting. And also I think like she is a very gifted musician, right? She plays guitar and she's very good at it. I don't play it. Nobody in our family plays guitar but her, but she's a very gifted musician. And I think, well, both her father and I are very into music. And so we could see that in her and cultivate it. What if there's something that she also has that she's just gifted at that because of who her father and I are, we're not seeing it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and had she had different parents, would she be brilliant at something else that we'll never, you know, that part of it has been really interesting to kind of watch and go, okay, what can I support here? And gosh, is there anything I'm missing about her gift?
That
another parent might've seen.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that in the end, not to get into the helicoptering thing too much, but most of it comes from a place of not wanting our kids to miss out on an opportunity. And I think for a lot of people, it comes from a a good place or a place of wanting to make sure that we, like you said, like that we untap every potential source of greatness.
Yeah.
But of course, then what that turns into is a lot of pressure for kids and yeah. all that. So that's a whole other conversation. But that was fascinating to hear how that's yeah. working for you guys.
Sarah, our sponsor, Hiya Health, makes a kid's daily multivitamin that parents can feel great about giving their kids because they have no added sugars or dyes. And our kids who have tried Hiya vitamins have loved them, which is important, right? Because what good is a bottle of vitamins that your kid won't take?
Hiya was founded by two dads who didn't like the ingredients label on some of the popular children's vitamins they were seeing on store shelves. So they got to work developing a formula that would help fill the most common nutrient gaps in modern kids' diets. Hiya's chewable kids vitamin is made with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're also vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Hiya manufactures their vitamins right here in the USA with globally sourced ingredients, and then they ship their chewable vitamins directly to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You're going to get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/momhour. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/momhour and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults. We are welcoming back Vionic as a sponsor today. And Sarah, I will be honest. I was sorting through my warmer weather wardrobe the other day, and it could seriously use a refresh. But you know what's good to go? My shoes. I've got a great selection to choose from thanks to the Vionic Vitals collection. And lately, the pair I keep putting on again and again is the Uptown Loafer. I have two pairs, one in sand suede and the other in camel leather. But please don't make me pick a favorite.
Oh, I won't. I'll let you keep both. That's so funny, Megan, because I was a little jealous of your Uptown Loafers. I was the last one on our team to get a pair, but I just did. I also got mine in the sand suede, and I think I've worn them like 4 times this week. They really finish off a cute spring outfit. The Vionic Vitals collection has the best essential styles for everyday wear to get you ready for spring. And no matter what shoes you choose, you'll be on the go in comfort because every single pair of Vionic shoes delivers their trademark VioMotion technology for a difference you can feel. Vionic sandals, sneakers, and flats all offer incredible support, stability, and cushioning, and every pair comes with a 30-day risk-free trial, so it's easy to try them out.
Use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's a one-time use only. Vionic shoes, wearable well-being for your feet.
Okay, we are back. I'm here with Karen Walron, and we are going to really switch gears from mothering a teenager.
Yeah.
Karen, you guys, I have not really teased this much to our listeners, but you guys went through a pretty unthinkable thing with Hurricane Harvey back in 2017. Yeah. So why don't you just...
August 28th, 2017.
Yes, to be exact. So why don't you just, you know, tell us what happened?
Yeah. So so we live in Houston, mm-hmm. Texas, and Hurricane Harvey, as if you watched the news at all, you know that it was pretty devastating in our part of the world. What was really interesting and something that whenever I've given the opportunity to talk about Harvey is I like to remind people that Harvey didn't hit Houston, right? Because a lot of people are like, why didn't you guys leave? What the hell? Like, you know, why wouldn't you have left? So Harvey actually hit 200 miles south of Houston. It hit mm-hmm. Corpus Christi. And, you know, those of us who live on the coast, we're pretty hardy folk. And mm-hmm. And we're also, you know, that we've had hurricanes, right? So we kind of are pretty good, or yep. at least so we thought, about measuring when, you know, we got to go or not. Hurricane Ike, who made landfall, I think about 10 years earlier.
Okay.
That one, we left town. It was like, okay, I think it was a much smaller, like, uh-huh. I think it was 3 or 4. I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but okay. I can't remember what category it was, but it was coming to Houston and we're like, we're not sticking around. We're out of here. Like, mm-hmm. let's go. The other thing is Houston generally floods, right? Houston is sort of built for flooding. We flood all the time. We have a hard, you know, we have a bad enough thunderstorm. The streets flood.
Right.
But the drainage is generally amazing. And You know, the streets might flood, but unless you really live in a flood zone, you know, you kind of, you know, if there's a storm coming, you get some food for a couple of days because the streets might be impassable, but your house is generally okay.
Yeah.
Harvey was unprecedented. We had like literally a year's worth of rainfall in a day. Like it was insane. And so we didn't leave. We knew it was going to be making landfall south of us. Mm-hmm. We knew there was going to be a flooding event, but our neighborhood had never in its 50-year history, and in Houston, 50-year neighborhood is an old neighborhood, right?
Yep.
So, and its 50-year history had never flooded before. So we went out and got foods and stuff like that. And also we weren't worried about wind or
anything. You weren't going
like
to be in the actual
because
hurricane.
We're not in the eye. Right. So we weren't in the eye. So the hurricane made landfall in Corpus Christi, Port Aransas, sort of south of us. And then it turned and it started coming back toward the coast again and sort of going north and back toward the coast. And that's when all hell broke loose. So we woke up the morning, I think it was the 28th, to tornado warnings on our phones. Our phones had all gone off saying, you know. And so we were going to take shelter, weren't really worried about it. But, you know, because it wasn't that, like, it wasn't storming outside. So we heard it, kind of, you know, listened, and there weren't thunderstorms. So we're like, all right, we'll just go take shelter, whatever, but until it's all clear. So we went in our hallway, but my husband, who is English and is not used to storms and thinks all of it is incredibly fascinating, like, went to the front door to see if he could see the tornado. And instead saw water 6 inches from our front door, our house that had never flooded. And so he was like, Karen, we got to, you know, let's go. We got to move. And then our neighbors across the street were already getting water in their house. And so we started lifting things. It was the Sunday before school was supposed to start. And so I told my daughter, I'm like, we may have to evacuate. Go pack your bag. Just put everything we bought, all your back to school clothes.
Yeah.
Like in... you know, in this thing, because I was like, that's easy, get some underwear, back to school clothes, and we'll get going.
Right.
Thinking, okay, we'll evacuate and,
yeah.
you know, maybe have to stay with my parents for a day or two and then be back in the house. Long story short, obviously the flood came in, and then because the reservoirs north of us the dams were in danger of breaking, mm-hmm. and had they broken, there would have been like catastrophic deaths.
Mm-hmm.
The Corps of Engineers decided to start releasing the water, doing slow release. And we live on the route where that would have been released. And so we ended up with 2 feet of water, and it stayed because for 2 weeks.
So
we were out of our house for 2 weeks. By the time we got back in the house, we pretty much lost everything.
Because of the standing water. So then foundation the
foundation was done. Everything had, like, our dining room was sinking. All of our clothes, because we had a one-story house.
Yeah.
And so all of our bedrooms, like any clothes that
anything
were hanging.
Anything touching the, I mean, anything.
Was disgusting. Yeah. So that was pretty gross. We saved art.
Yeah.
That was one thing
I remember you posting about that. So anything hung on the wall was relatively safe. What about things on like a bookshelf?
Safe.
Like what about on a higher
high
shelf?
Books. High books for safe. Yeah.
If you're, so, and it was like the Titanic. I don't mean to laugh, but it's like.
It was funny. And the other thing that was really weird was our air conditioner. We never lost power. And so my husband wisely had turned the air down in our house to 55 degrees because we were afraid of mold, right?
Like
that's the big thing that you're worried about.
Right.
So for like days, he would come back to check on the house and wait in. And like, as soon as he opened the front door, like the temperature around his feet, you know, his legs as he waited, it would like drop 20 degrees from outside.
So funny.
Because of that, like we had like all of the art, you know, which is on canvas and fabric, like no mold grew. And, but you know, also our clothes, we were a little concerned about, so we just didn't risk it. All of our shoes were gone.
So you basically lost everything but some art. I mean, the house was, you lost your home and everything in it, save a few art pieces.
Art pieces and like 2 tables, you know, mattresses, by the way, are just giant sponges. That was disgusting.
Oh,
right.
God.
So, but all appliances, everything else was gone.
And at what point did you, I mean, I have followed along with this as you've gone through it, but at what point did you know right away, we're going to rebuild, we're going to do this again right here. This is our lot. Or was there thought of like, we're moving to Portland or like, I mean, like, was it always like, no, this is where we live. We're going to rebuild.
Well, there was never a thought that we'd leave Houston for sure. Right. I mean, my husband's job is here.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't ever, you know, it's not like we lost our job with the hurricane.
Right.
So like we knew we were staying. The question was whether we were going to just try to sell the lot, which we actually had bought. We bought our lot below current market value.
Okay.
Right. So we knew that even if we sold the lot, we were going to be okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we were, mm-hmm. gonna, we wouldn't sell it at a loss and move like farther out of town. Mm-hmm. Because we couldn't afford to, or so we thought, build in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Or bite the bullet and figure out how to rebuild on our lot, because our it's in a really desirable neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? And also, we knew that if we could build, if we could afford to build, it would end up being financially a financially good thing, because mm-hmm. I'm so conservative with money as right. it is anyway, that a lot of people were buying houses in our neighborhood and right. raising the old houses and putting right. up new ones. So right. it's like, do we allow us to join that bandwagon?
Right.
And by the way, we had no flood insurance. So
would it have covered it? I know sometimes in floods, my parents live in Montecito where there was the big mudslides last year. And I know flood insurance is so tricky because even when you have it, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not covered.
Flood insurance would have covered it.
Okay.
Yes, it for sure. Yeah. Our homeowner's insurance didn't. Like you had to get right. flood insurance right. separate. So our homeowner's insurance wouldn't and didn't. But the flood insurance, yeah, it would have been nice,
yeah,
you know, to have been able to do that. But yeah, so we knew that whatever we did, we were gonna have to take out another mortgage. You know, like we were gonna have to go into deep debt to do it. But we decided, like, well, you know what, we priced it all out. And we thought, yeah, I think we can handle this. So it may mean that we can't take the fabulous, you know, travel that we've right. been doing like before.
This will be the adventure this year.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. all, and maybe going forward, right? Because our yeah. mortgage payment was yeah. going to go up. And also it meant, you know, like, you know, it just affected everything. It felt yeah. like, how are we planning for college, yeah. you know, for yeah. Alex and stuff like that. So it affected everything. But in the end, we thought, you know, in the long run, it was smarter to do it, especially in a neighborhood that really didn't flood. And as far as everybody was concerned, this was a freak thing that happened.
Right
now
right.
we can get into climate change and right. decide whether right. or not this really is a freak thing, but it was just so yeah. you know, unprecedented. So
yeah.
So we stayed. I mean, I was pretty adamant that I said, you know, my husband, I think, would have been, if I had said, yeah, let's do it, we would have sold.
Right.
But I was like, no, I think we really need to explore whether or not we can stay. And it worked out being the right decision.
And so, spoiler alert, you are currently recording as we speak in a brand new home on the
brand
lot
new home.
Where
yeah,
you we lost your home. And that's been, it's been a year and a half, right? Just
yep.
about exactly.
It has been. We got in about 2-3 months ago, almost 3 months ago. The house, we had 23 inches of water in our house. Our house is built 24 inches higher than the original one. And we have a second story now.
Yeah, like,
so we can move things up if
yeah,
we need to.
Yeah.
But yes, we are in the house. Thank God. Yes.
Well, I mean, obviously it's a powerful story. I think where I want to go from here is you know, you're a creative person. You mm-hmm. Love art and travel, and you got this opportunity, shall we say, mm-hmm. to create a home from scratch when you didn't think that was the plan. I mean, you were
right.
I'm curious, as you think about kind of your home, the place where the three of you live, the physical environment, were there things that you, other than like, let's put an upstairs and let's raise this baby up 24 inches. But
yeah.
besides that, were there more kind of emotional or other elements that you wanted to bring in, given this opportunity you didn't think you were going to be redecorating or redesigning a home
yeah.
at this stage in your life? I'm curious if what that process was like.
Yeah. So the first thing that was really important to us is, you know, at this point, I mean, I'm in my early 50s, right? So we know that we're going to have to sell this house,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I do not plan on paying a mortgage till I'm 80 years old,
right?
So at some point we're going to have to sell it, which meant that there were certain decisions about the house that we were like, what will sell 10 years from now, as opposed to, oh, let's build our dream house,
sure.
right? Like that's 100%
yeah.
us. So that was one thing that we had to think about. Like, you know, we don't, you know, we want it to be the right size for us, but also we want it to be the right size for the neighborhood,
sure.
right? As people
sure.
do. And so we're like, how do you balance that?
Yeah.
Or should I go with the cool tile that's really, you know, funky and awesome that will look completely dated in 5 years, or
right.
do we go with, you know,
right.
the subway tile that's, you
right.
know, that's
right.
pretty classic or whatever. So that, there was that. But As far as the interior of the house, I mean, it was really, you know, quite a gift because like we're starting from scratch, right? Yeah. Like it's not like this furniture we inherited from so-and-so or, right. you know, from our family member or whatever. And so I was very intentional about how do I want people to feel when they come into our house?
Uh-huh.
And again, you know, it was literally back to sort of the family value stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I want people to feel like whenever they enter our home, that no matter what their background is, whatever matter what their story is, they're home.
Mm-hmm.
They have a home here. And so what has resulted is a house that looks a little insane, right? Like we have, you know, we have, you know, we bought things on Etsy from different parts of the world. I've shared recently that, I recently did my 23andMe.
And, okay. Yes. I remember you saying this.
And being like, you know, I mean, I'm Black, but you know, being descended of the enslaved, what does that mean? Like mm-hmm. Africa is a big continent.
Yeah.
But recently we found out, you know, like, oh, I'm mostly Nigerian and Senegalese and Congolese. And what does that look like? And what does the art from these places look like?
Yeah.
You know, and how do we do that? My daughter who was adopted, I mean, what we know now, we're awaiting her results.
I was going to see if you did that. Yeah.
We just did it. But what we did know was like her birth mother is Mexican-American and her birth father was Afro-Colombian. And okay. So, well, how do we get Colombian? You know, my parents who travel a lot, my mother, they downsized during this time. And my mother had this Colombian art. And I was like, that's coming with me. Right.
That's part of our story now.
Exactly. That's coming with me. So like, so how do we, you know, bring that in? And, you know, and my husband is English and Irish. And what does that look like? And if we put that into our home. And so we definitely were like, if you come in our house, one of the rooms, Marcus and I laugh because you can look at the art and the furnishings, and I think count 14 different countries that are in that one room.
Well, I have seen some pictures. I have not been in your house, although right. I will stop by if I'm in the neighborhood.
Please do.
But I have seen pictures, and I love, I mean, that's actually a look that I love, is this collected look, and a curated look. It's not like, it doesn't look like you just had like international like explosion. It's thoughtful.
Well, that's kind. Yeah. I think it looks a little insane, but I love it. And it looks like us, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like the multinational, multiracial family that we are.
Yeah.
And so, so I love it. And I, you know, and some of it, like it's all the, you know, the art and the things that were on high shelves, like, because we had stuff like that, but then also like the rugs, like Etsy is fantastic, right? Mm-hmm, like half of our house, I would say, is an ode to IKEA and Etsy. And
so, I love it.
And so, you know, you could get stuff that are really cool. Like, oh, let's figure out how that's going to look. So that, and that's really been a gift because I don't know when we'll ever have that. I hope we never have that opportunity again,
right.
Where we have a blank slate. Right. And I mean, I love a decorated house. Like I
right.
love, I have friends who have hired decorators and their homes look really beautiful, but for me, it feels a little, cool. Like it's mm-hmm. like going to a really beautiful, like hotel.
Yes,
like it's lovely,
yes,
but there's no sort of connection necessarily
right,
there.
Right.
And definitely with our house, you're going to ask questions.
There's a story under every coaster.
Yeah.
How
much.
Did Alex, I mean, obviously there was trauma for all of you as, with the home rebuild, was she excited about, you know, her room and the new decor, or is this kind of like, is she in a phase where home is home? Home is where mom and dad are. I'm curious how the physical, yeah. the new physical space, has, how she's related to that.
So she's great. She's loved it. So one of the things that we did with this house is because she's just started high school, mm-hmm. like we're like, okay, well, let's make it a high school room for her.
I love that.
And so even though she has the smallest room now, again, this is the whole only room, only child thing, right?
Right?
So we could do this, but she has the smallest room, but we put an ensuite bath
nice.
With her. So and we real and there's also a little office area. So
oh,
it's actually
really
kind
cool.
of a little suite
yeah,
for her.
Yeah, I love that.
The office area is actually open to the rest of the house sort
okay.
of, but we hung like beaded curtain
uh-huh.
so that it made it more private for her. And then what was really funny was she loves like home decor, like the HGTV stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't really watch television here, but like on YouTube,
yes.
she loves those kind of things. And so she was like, I want it to be like a home makeover.
Uh-huh.
So she gave me a Pinterest board and she was like, this is kind
it.
Of what I want. I want to be surprised, which is insane, right? I was like, thank God, because now I don't have to fight with her. Like, so I had an inspiration board for her for her room. And then I got to put it together. And so it was sort of unveiled, right? Like with her, like I didn't tell her what kind of bed I was going to get. And like I put twinkle lights everywhere and, you know, and I didn't tell her any of that until we started putting together her room. And I was like, oh, you know, I got these lights and we can put these up. And I got some framed art for her and for her house. So that, you know, there were musicians and, you know, things like that. So she's loving it. Like it feels like a high school thing for her. So she's,
and that's
she's
just a really cool thing for your relationship too. I mean, she had the independence to know what she wanted, but you as a mom got to be in that nurturing space where you helped make it happen. I mean, I think it's kind of a beautiful teenage story, right? Like they need us, they need us to furnish their rooms, but they have their own, it is their own space.
Well, I will say that sounds very sweet and it makes it sound very more Madonna and child than it was. I was just happy that I was not going to have to, like, I could watch the money, right? Like,
because
her Pinterest board included a picture of a bedroom that had sort of a loft bed. And under the bed was a jacuzzi. Okay, first of all, you're on the second floor. And secondly, no, like, of course you're not getting a jacuzzi. What is wrong with you? Right. So it was nice to be able to just kind of do like sort of my own thing. And there were things like, I think she would have loved to have had that. I was like, yeah, that budget was never going to happen.
Right.
But still, like, I was able to have some freedom with it. So it worked out great. And she loves it. And her colors were like gray and pale pink, which are a very nice calm, like there's nothing offensive about that color. So it was easy for us. It doesn't look like any of the rest of the house, because the house, as I, you know, it looks like a global bazaar explosion, right?
That's
but
so funny.
Hers is the calm oasis in the room, but it worked out really well.
That's really cool. I love it. Well, before we wrap, I want to talk about your podcast, Make Light, and also how that relates to the work that you do now as a coach. But let's, in case listeners aren't familiar with Make Light, let's start with the podcast. Tell everybody what it is now and maybe how it's evolved a little bit. And then we'll also talk about, you know, the work that you do outside the podcast.
Yeah. So the podcast originally was sort of like just, well, first of all, Make Light is sort of my like a mantra that I have.
And it's explain a really that
sort
phrase.
Of, it's sort of about how we move in the world and how, you know, how we can not only like try to create good around us and to create good for the world, but also how, when we're faced with difficulty or faced with adversity, we can figure out how to make light out of it. Mm-hmm. How do we meet it in a place where we're like, okay, this is hard, but how can we turn it into something that is of value to us and that, you know, and I don't want to say spun. The spun is the word that keeps coming to mind. I don't want to say spun, but I want to be able to, you know, like, for example, for Harvey, for us, I was like, how do we make Harvey end up being, in hindsight, one of the most amazing things that ever happened to us? And it really was. Like, I have so much gratitude around the help people gave us. Mm-hmm. I love our city in a way that I never loved it before, because I watched how resilient it was and how we sort of reached out to each other. And so there's a way to do that. And so the podcast started with, let's start talking about people who are doing that and interviewing people who are doing that and figuring out what sort of lessons can come out of that. Mm-hmm. And so the first few seasons were that. Since then, it's sort of morphed more into how do you do it as part of your work, and sort of the listener can define what work means. Like, it could mean like a, you know, a corporate career. It could be how you do it as an activist or a philanthropist in your world, or it could be how you do it in your, just your family and your community. Like, how do you create a better world using the sphere of influence that you have? Mm-hmm. As a coach, I do that. I help people do that in their business, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I do. So there is a lot of business that's involved with that, but it doesn't have to be that. It can be anything else. And so I still have guests occasionally come on. A lot of it is mostly me. Mm-hmm. And I take listener questions. So people will write in, like one that actually will be going up in a few days from now, has to do with imposter syndrome. And how do you deal with imposter syndrome? And what are some tips and tricks in order to be able to, you know, to overcome that? But, you know, I've had everything from people who are talking about how do you express your values and what you stand for and how you want to move in the world through the way you dress yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can be anything. It can be how do you raise kids to be more, you know, more activist, and mm-hmm. how do you have difficult conversations with coworkers if mm-hmm. they don't share your values, or how do you bring your own values to your work? So it's all sort of related to how do you make light? How do you mm-hmm. create light using your own sphere of influence?
I love that. And the coaching that you're doing, if I understand it correctly, a lot of your clients are people who've had success, or, you know, gotten to a place of leadership or mm-hmm. success in their careers and are not struggling, but looking for that meaning or that purpose. Is that kind of how you defined it? Is it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I would say, yes, I'd say that's definitely true for some. For some people, they are people who are entrepreneurs and have started businesses mm-hmm. To already make that, you know, or they're brand new at starting a business mm-hmm. and they're figuring out, you know, how do I do that, and sort of needing a sounding board as they navigate that. What's really interesting is all of my clients are very focused on making the world a better place. And that's that has been by accident, but I love that that's what it is.
Well, they're drawn to you. I mean, there's something in there, right? Like, there's a reason why those people have landed with you.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. And so, I have, somebody who owns a gym. I have a priest. I have a surgeon. I have lawyers, right? So it's really interesting. Like, the backgrounds are very diverse.
Yeah.
But they all are, very focused on how do I use the skills and the talents and the experience and the education that I have to kind of make the world better. And that's a dream job for me, right?
So yeah, it's great. Yeah. That's amazing. And you do have a background as an engineer and an attorney. So I would imagine that you've got that very process oriented, or the ability to see process oriented goal setting and all of that. But then you have, this other part of your career that's been in photography and speaking and writing. So what a cool way to bring it all together.
Oh, it's a joy. It really is.
Awesome. Well, Karen, thank you so much for being here with us. In the show notes for this episode at themomhour.com, we will link to everything. I'd love to show a picture of your current home. And maybe any other places where you've talked about Harvey or any of this. So basically, we'll link it all up.
That's great.
We will link up everything. The podcast is called Make Light. Season 4 is happening now.
Yep.
I was getting caught up on the first few episodes of season 4 and I'm loving it. So
thank
you so much for being here. And it's everybody listening, go find Karen. Tell us the best place to find you online, just the simplest.
I mean, the simplest is KarenWaldron.com. My site is called Chickalunks, which is an impossible thing to remember how to do it. But if you just put my name, KarenWaldron.com, you'll get there. And I just want to say before we sign off that obviously you and Megan have been such an inspiration for me in podcasting and how to put good out there. Thank you guys for all the amazing help that you've given me along the way.
We're so glad to have just been a tiny piece of, getting your getting your voice out there. And I'm excited now to bring it to our listeners. So thanks to Karen, and thanks to everybody for listening.
Guess what, Megan? Over 10,000 teens are already using our sponsor, Erica, to help them unplug.
That is amazing. Erica, that's Erica with a K, is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug whenever they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance. It's so cool how this works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Yeah, teens really get that social media comes with risks, including addiction. And Erica helps them build healthy habits and self-regulation that will benefit them their whole lives. Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica family plan with promo code TheMomHour. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code TheMomHour to save 20%. The Mom Hour is brought to you by partners like Chatbooks. Chatbooks makes it beyond easy to create beautiful photo books by importing your digital photos from anywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Google Photos, or directly from your phone. The books come in a variety of sizes with beautiful cover options and binding styles to choose from, and they start at just $15. Plus, we have a great deal just for our listeners. Use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20% off your purchase. Just download the Chatbooks app and use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20%.